Chapter 10. Competence on the battlefield is a myth. The side which screws up next to last wins. It's as simple as that. Lord General Zyvan. The only real problem we had with Slablard in the end was shutting him up. I downloaded the list of names, dates and locations he'd given us to the hololith in the conference suite with the air of a conjurer at a children's party producing an egg from an ear. "If anything, we've got a little too much to go on now," I said. Zyvan and the senior Colby nodded, taking it all in as it scrolled up the display. Vinzand, I noticed, was absent, presumably because this was an operational matter and nothing he needed to be concerned with. Well, that suited me. The less debate there was before we took action, the better, so far as I was concerned. "My people should be able to pick up any of these individuals who slipped through the net," Hequin said. "But under the circumstances, we're a little stretched to be mounting simultaneous raids on half a dozen different addresses."
"I see your point," Zyvan replied, having evidently been keeping abreast of the situation in the city.
"Not to mention the rest of the planet. The praetors in every major population center were tied up with heretic hunting and the suppression of civil disorder, just as they were in Skitterfall."
He turned to Colby. "Perhaps the PDF could oblige us with the necessary manpower." He would rather have used guardsmen, I was sure, but we were so widely scattered, it would have taken hours to bring sufficient troopers back to the city, and if the heretics noticed Slablard had disappeared in the meantime, they'd be long gone by the time we were ready to deploy. The Valhallan tanks were already in place, of course, but I tried to picture a troop of Leman Ruses moving stealthily through the crowded streets and had to suppress a smile. We might just as well vox ahead and let the cultists know we were coming. "Of course," Colby nodded, all calm efficiency, clearly confident in his troops' ability to deal with whatever awaited them. I hoped he was right. "I can have a couple of companies at your disposal within minutes."
"I'm sure that will be sufficient," Zyvan said, straight-faced.
That would give us practically 2 full platoons for each objective, which was as surefire a recipe for utter confusion as I could imagine. That number of troopers would be getting in each other's way more often than engaging the enemy. "But perhaps we should assign personnel to the operations once we've determined conditions on the ground." That took a while, as you'd imagine, but at last we'd worked out the optimum troop deployment for each of the objectives, and Colby had issued the orders. I stretched, glanced at my chronograph, and found to my surprise that it was still a few moments short of noon. "Well, that appears to be that," I said as Hequin departed for the Arbites building, and the 2 generals stood, preparing to walk down to Zyvan's command post. The Lord General nodded.
"I suppose you must be eager to return to your regiment," he said.
I thought of the bone-chilling cold of Glacier Peak and the endless tedium of the train journey before I reached it, and nodded with every appearance of enthusiasm I could muster.
"My place is with them,"
I agreed, unable to find a plausible reason to delay my departure. One crumb of consolation was that I should be able to hang around here long enough to grab a decent lunch before I went there. Zyvan smiled, sure he could read my real thoughts. "But you'd rather hang on here and see what the raids turn up, eh? After all, if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't even have these leads." "I'm sure Arbitrator Hequin's people would have found them just as quickly," I said, trying not to look too eager. If he meant what I thought he did, it looked as though I could hang around here in the warm, enjoying every comfort the place had to offer for at least another day after all, maybe even longer if I drew out the process of appearing to evaluate the intelligence we gathered.
"I'm sure they would," Zyvan said, sounding about as convinced of that as I had. "If you don't mind delaying your departure for a while, it occurs to me things might go a little smoother this afternoon if we have a representative of the Commissariat along on the operation."
He shot a sidelong glance at Colby.
"No reflection on your people, of course. It would just save us the necessity of forwarding a formal report to them afterwards."
"By all means," Colby said, no doubt happier at the prospect of his trooper's performance being scrutinized by me rather than some rear echelon data pusher with the benefit of hindsight. "It would be an honor to serve with your command," I told him, albeit briefly. If I'd known what I was about to get into, of course, my answer would have been very different, and I'd practically have run for the blasted train. But all I could see at the time was the prospect of another couple of days of good food and comfortable bedding. So it was that an hour or so later, I found myself rattling down a city boulevard in the back of the Salamander, half a dozen chimeras behind me, and my combead full of excited chatter from PDF troopers all keyed up about their first taste of action. "Vox discipline,"
I reminded them, trying to make allowances. And the extraneous traffic died with gratifying speed. We're passing the outer marker. After some consideration, I detached myself to the group going after a house in the suburbs owned by one of the people Slablard had implicated, a woman called Kyria Sedgwick, who Hequin claimed had tenuous links to a number of organised crime figures and probably ran a stable of high-rent joy girls. She also had a very good lawyer and connections to several members of the Council of Claimants, which meant that so far the Arbetes had been unable to accumulate sufficient evidence for an arrest. Taking on a handful of bodyguards and a houseful of women seemed a lot safer than going in against the warehouse where the weapons had ended up, which was no doubt heavily guarded and stuffed with explosive to boot, although I hadn't shared those reasons for selecting this particular objective with the generals, of course. "This is the obvious target," I'd said, highlighting the warehouse on the holomap and giving every appearance of being eager to storm the place single-handed. A few other icons glowed, picking out the secondary targets, and I pointed at the Sedgwick house with just the right degree of a puzzled frown. "But something about this place doesn't feel right." "How do you mean?" Colby asked obligingly, and I shrugged. "I can't quite put my finger on it, but this woman's record, highly placed, intimations of vice. I'm probably reading too much into it, but it could be the centre of the Slaaneshi cult in the city," Zyvan said, taking the bait. I continued to look dubious. "It's possible, of course, but the warehouse is definitely our most promising lead." "Nevertheless," the Lord General said, the idea I'd planted clearly taking root in his mind, "it's a possibility we can't afford to ignore. Perhaps you'd better accompany that platoon instead." "It might be wise," Colby agreed. "If there's evidence of sorcery there, the men would find your presence extremely reassuring." "Well," I said, with every sign of reluctance, "if you're both convinced of the need..." By the time I'd finished protesting, of course, they were practically insisting I raided what I had no doubt was nothing more sinister than a high-class bordello, and I gave in with as much good grace as I could simulate. "That must be it," Jürgen said, indicating a high brick wall running along the edge of the pavement. It certainly seemed to be. The other houses, large, rambling structures, their windows glowing warmly, were set back from the road behind lawns and shrubberies designed to emphasise the scale and ostentation of the buildings they contained. Only this one was sealed away behind what was beginning to look like a fortification, and my palms began to tingle with the intimation that perhaps this wasn't going to be the pushover I'd expected. Then again, given what we knew of her character and probable activities, Sedgwick no doubt had a lot to hide in any case. "It is," I confirmed, after a surreptitious glance at the map slate just to make sure. I activated the combead. "This is it," I broadcast over the platoon tacnet so everyone could hear me.
The PDF troopers wouldn't be equipped with personal combeads, like the guardsman Kane was used to fighting alongside, or more likely behind if he could contrive it, but each squad would have included a specialist carrying a portable vox unit.
"I don't have to tell you how important this is, for Adumbria and for the Imperium. I hope I also don't need to tell you that General Colby and I have complete confidence in you all, and know you won't let us or the Emperor down. Onward to victory!" It was one of the pre-battle speeches I'd been reciting by rote since the day I left the Skola, but the PDF troopers had never heard it before, and it did the job. Far better than I expected, as things turned out. "You heard the Commissar?" That was the platoon commander, an excitable young man called Nalian, who looked barely old enough to shave, and who wore his officer's cap at what he no doubt thought was a rakish angle. "Deploy to your positions!" After a chorus of acknowledgements from the various squad leaders, the Chimera split up, Nalian's command vehicle and first squad halting in front of the main gates, tasteless wrought iron scroll work with a hint of drooping lilies and far too much gilt, while the rest broke left and right, tearing up the lawns and flattening the shrubberies of the no doubt outraged neighbours. Jürgen and I kept up with the left flank, which dropped a Chimera by the side wall before crashing through a boundary hedge to link up with another troop transport which had approached from the other side. "Third and fifth squad in position," I reported, more to remind everyone I was still there than because it was necessary. A rattling gardener was staring at us and the deep furrows across what had obviously once been a lovingly tended lawn, with an expression of stupefied astonishment even more pronounced than was usual for his kind. As his eyes fell on Jürgen, he started visibly and fled. "Mr. Spavin!" he cried as he went. "Mr. Spavin, the doom's come upon us at last!" He spoke truer than he knew, of course, but there was no time to worry about him or his employer now. I listened to a chorus of position reports in my comm bead as the other squad leaders reported in, and Nalian gave the order to attack. "All units move in!" he shouted in a voice which barely trembled from the tension, and with a roar of gunning engines, the Chimeras moved forward, their heavy bolters opening up and blowing large sections of the wall to rubble. The salamander jerked under my feet as we ploughed across it, but I kept my balance instinctively after nearly 2 decades of being driven by Jürgen, and I hoisted myself up behind the comforting bulk of the bolter. Gouts of dust and the rattle of heavy weapons fire in the distance were all the confirmation I needed that the other 3 elements of our assault were on the move, although to their credit, the squad commanders kept their heads admirably and relayed a steady stream of status reports as crisply and concisely as a guardsman would. 2nd squad disembarking, their sergeant said, followed almost at once by similar messages from his counterparts in 1st and 4th. Resistance light. A crackle of small arms fire could be heard from the direction of the house now, as the occupants responded to the unexpected attack. Absently, I picked out the sounds of stubber fire from the sharper crack of the lasguns the PDF troopers bore, which confirmed that at the very least, the occupants had access to illegal weaponry. Slugs began to rattle against the armor plate of the salamander, and I returned fire without thinking, hosing down the facade of the house as Jürgen continued to bear down on it across a lawn no less immaculate than the one we'd chewed to pieces next door. Without warning, one of the Chimeras ahead of us lurched to a halt, the red flare of explosive detonation standing out starkly in the perpetual twilight, and panicked troopers began bailing out. A couple fell, caught by the blizzard of stubber fire. 3rd squad, stay in cover, dammit! I just had time to yell before Jürgen swung the bucking salamander hard to the left. Something shot past us no more than a meter away, leaving a small trail of smoke, and detonated against what was left of the garden wall behind us. "They got missile launchers," I voxed, trying to bring the bolter round to retaliate, and reflecting that I could have been on a nice, uncomfortable train by now instead of in mortal danger again. "Leave the vehicles and move in on foot." "Acknowledged," Nalian replied. "All squads advance by fire and movement."
A common infantry tactic, where half the squad lays down covering fire while the other half advances, then the first group of troopers provides covering fire for the rest to catch up.
He was on the ball all right. I had to give him that. "Jürgen," I called. "Did you see where that rocket came from?" "About 1 o'clock, Commissar," he responded as calmly as if I'd just asked him to get some more Tanner. I swung the pintle-mounted weapon around in that direction and my bowels spasmed. There were at least 2 missile launchers being aimed at us from within a pair of tall glass windows and what looked like a heavy stubber on a tripod. Most, to my vague surprise, were being wielded with considerable expertise by young women whose minimal state of dress left little doubt as to their day jobs.
Or night jobs, to be a little more accurate.
Any second now we'd be joining the Chimera behind us, which was blazing away merrily by this time. "Head for the nearest cover!" I yelled, squeezing the trigger and hoping to put their aim off just long enough for Jürgen to take us out of the line of fire. To my amazement, he gunned the engine, accelerating even more rapidly towards the house. "Very good, sir." He triggered the hull-mounted heavy bolter, reducing a couple of the Amazons to unpleasant stains, and before I had time to realize what he was doing, he had roared up the patio, scattering some ornamental shrubs in the process to ram us through the flimsy wood and glass partition behind which our assailants had taken shelter. One of the survivors disappeared under the tracks with an abruptly curtailed shriek, and the salamander slammed to a halt against the far wall of an opulent living room, reducing a marble fireplace to rubble in the process. 5th squad, follow the commissar!" The squad sergeant, Varant, if my memory serves, bawled in the combead, and before I knew it, 60 of troopers had followed up our impromptu and precipitous entry, finishing off the rest of the defenders in the process, which at least saved us the bother. The survivors of 3rd squad joined them a moment later, and everyone looked at me expectantly. "Very good," I said, adjusting my cap and stepping down from the salamander as nonchalantly as I could. "Let's get this done." "Yes, sir," Varant said, with an expression of awe on his face, and started organizing the men. I looked at my aide. "Jürgen," I began, then decided there wasn't any point remonstrating with him. He'd followed my orders after all, and things had worked out as well as they ever did. "That was..." Words for once failed me. "Resourceful," he suggested, reaching back inside the driver's compartment for the melter, which, true to form, he'd brought with him. "To say the least," I said, drawing my las pistol. 2nd squad advancing. Their sergeant reported in my combead, his voice calm as ever. No resistance so far.
Copy that,
Nalion responded. First squad report. There was a pause, broken only by the hissing of static.
First squad respond.
My palms were itching again, a sense of foreboding I could almost taste fluttering in my gut. The lieutenant's voice took on an edge of asperity.
First squad, where are you?
Fourth squad, a new voice cut in, a note of suppressed panic quite clearly detectable.
We found bodies. Could be them.
What do you mean, could be? Nalion snapped.
It's hard to tell, sir. There's not much left.
His voice choked off. This wouldn't do at all. We'd clearly blundered into something very dangerous, and if anyone panicked now, it would spread like a spark in a promethium tank, which would cut my chances of getting out of here in one piece more considerably than I'd found acceptable.
This is Commissar Kane, I cut in. Stay alert, stay focused. Fire on anything that moves which isn't one of ours. Is that understood?
Yes, sir.
It seemed to have done the trick anyway. The man's voice was shaking a little less.
Moving on to next mark.
Good, I told him, hoping to bolster the squad's sagging morale.
Remember, the Emperor protects!
I never finished the platitude, the Vox channel suddenly becoming swamped with sounds which, in an eerie, overlapping echo, carried to our ears through the air a fraction of a second later. Screams, the chatter of lasguns on full auto, and a sound which raised the hairs on the back of my neck. Melodious, inhuman laughter. A moment later, the sounds of the evidently one-sided battle ended abruptly.
Fourth squad, report!
Nalion bellowed, but no answer came. And if he honestly expected one, he was the biggest optimist in the system.
What do we do, sir?
Varant asked, and after a moment, I realized he was looking at me, ignoring the lieutenant's voice completely. I assessed the situation rapidly. Retreat, always a good choice in my book, was impossible. Apart from the fact that it would undermine my reputation, it would expose us to Emperor alone knew how much fire from the house as we made our way back across that wide-open lawn, and I didn't intend to become a bit of easy target practice for some civilian tart with a new toy. I shrugged, trying to look nonchalant, and speak through a mouth which had suddenly gone as dry as the hot side.
"We complete the mission," I said simply. "There's something foul in this place, and we need to cleanse it."
It seemed painfully obvious now that my carefully contrived excuse for being here was no more than the truth after all, which I suppose at least proves that the Emperor has a well-developed sense of irony, and I'd seen enough sorcery over the years to know that confronting it straight away is the only chance you've got of survival. Not a particularly good chance, I grant you, but trying to run from it only gives it more time to grow in power and come after you in its own terms rather than yours. I do hope that's not a criticism of the cleaning staff. A mellifluous voice chimed in. They do their best, you know, but it's such a rambling old place it's hard to keep on top of. The woman who spoke smiled easily as she strolled into the room, as though finding a score of armed men standing over the bodies of her associates was the most natural thing in the world.
If Kane is being literal here about there being a score of armed men, we can infer that only two men from Third Squad were actually incapacitated after their chimera was destroyed. However, it seems more likely from his other remarks that he's simply going for an approximate round number and that they suffered more casualties than this.
I began to bring my las pistol up instinctively, my finger tightening on the trigger, then froze, my heart pounding. I'd come within a hair of shooting Amberley. For a moment I was so startled that I was literally paralysed with astonishment, something which up until then I'd always assumed was merely a figurative cliché in the more undemanding kind of popular fiction. Her smile widened as she looked at me, and the knot of troopers whose lasguns all hung slack in their hands. "I know you must be surprised to see me here," she purred, the words sounding impossibly sweet and seductive. Something tried to push itself towards the front of my mind, but the vision of her, lovely as the last time we'd parted, the flower I'd plucked impossibly from the hagantha bush on the veranda still tucked behind her ear, filled my senses.
"Magritta?"
one of the troopers asked, as though he couldn't believe his own eyes, and the burgeoning thought became clearer. Something definitely wasn't right.
"Yes, my love."
Amberley reached out a hand, caressing him gently on the cheek, and a surge of white-hot jealousy erupted through me. Before I could react in any way, however, the trooper screamed, his body contorting, seeming to wither like a dried ploin before dropping to the floor. "Commissar," Jürgen tugged at my sleeve, an expression of puzzlement on his face, "are you going to let her get away with that?" "She's an inquisitor," I started to say. "She can do what she likes." But when I looked up again, Amberlee had gone. Well, she hadn't, of course, because she was never there in the first place, but you know what I mean. In her place, standing over the crumbling corpse of the fallen soldier, was a dumpy middle-aged woman in an unwise pink gown which would have looked fine on someone 10 years younger and as many kilos lighter. She looked directly at me, an expression of surprise and outrage beginning to suffuse her vaguely porcine features. "Madame Sedgwick," I said, savouring the flicker of uncertainty which rose in her eyes, almost losing my aim from the surge of anger which left my hand shaking from its force. Fortunately, my augmetic fingers were immune to such an emotional reaction and kept the muzzle of my las pistol centred firmly on her forehead. "Impersonating an inquisitor is a capital offence." She just had time to look even more startled before I pulled the trigger, and her warped, tainted brain erupted from the back of her skull to ruin a wall hanging which had evidently been chosen for its subject matter rather than its aesthetic qualities. "What happened?" Verand asked, looking slightly stunned. The rest of the troopers were snapping out of it too now, muttering in low tones, making the sign of the Aquila, and generally looking sheepish. "She was a witch," I told him, keeping things as simple as I could. "She did something to our minds. Made us see..." I made what I assumed at the time to be the obvious deductive leap, but which Malden later confirmed was a known power of Slaaneshi psychers. "Someone we care about."
Which for Kane was positively effusive, and, I must admit, rather gratifying.
"I see," he said, looking confused. "Lucky she didn't fool you." "Commissars are trained to spot that kind of thing," I lied smoothly, not wanting to draw any more attention than necessary to Jürgen. To tell the truth, I was more than a little concerned that Sedgwick had managed to get inside my head at all while he was so close. To my relief, I learned later that he'd gone back to the Salamander for his lasgun while I was busy with the Vox signals, taking me out of the range of his protective aura. It had belatedly occurred to him that his beloved Melter might be a little counterproductive in such a potentially inflammable building. As always, his pragmatism couldn't be faulted, although his timing left a lot to be desired. "Well, I suppose at least we know what happened to 1st and 4th Squad," the sergeant said, looking from the body of the witch to the desiccated husk of his erstwhile subordinate. "Possibly," I said. It didn't add up to me. 4th Squad had died quickly, in combat, not held by delusion to be picked off one by one. There's only one way to find out. And find out we did. The mortal remains of our comrades, and there were precious few of them, were scattered around a ground-floor hallway at the foot of a huge wooden staircase, the banisters of which were carved in the semblance of fornicating couples in a bewildering variety of anatomically improbable positions. Blood and scorch marks spattered the walls, which were decorated with the kind of debauched murals that I'd seen before in the Habdome, hidden away on the cold side, and a nagging sense of familiarity fought its way to the surface of my thoughts. "The rest of the house is clear," Nalian reported, looking slightly green as he took in the carnage, but determined not to throw up in front of the commissar. "No sign of anyone else on the premises." "False walls? Hidden chambers?" I asked, the memory of the Habdome still fresh. That strange scent that had flooded the air there, still faintly detectable through the more pervasive one of butchery. Nalian shook his head. "No sign of anything like that," he said. "We can bring in some tech priests with specialized equipment." "Don't worry about it," I told him to his evident relief. "The guard will take care of that. You and your men have done enough, and done it well." "Thank you, sir." He took the hint and fracked off with a perfunctory salute and an air of undisguised relief. "Jürgen," I said, pointing to the staircase. It was large and apparently solid, but we could have parked the Salamander in the space it enclosed. "If you wouldn't mind." "Of course not, sir," he assured me, and a moment later the familiar roar of the Melter and an actinic flash through my tightly closed eyelids told me he'd done as requested. Despite his fears of accidental arson, which he confided to me later, a little too late to have been much help if they were founded, but with Jürgen, following orders always came first, the surrounding wood failed to catch light. A large smoking hole was punched through the treads, looking uncannily like the entrance to a cave. I borrowed a luminator from one of his ever-present equipment pouches and took a cautious look inside.
Emperor on Earth!
I reeled back, choking from the smell. If anything, it was worse than the chamber we'd found in the Habdome, although the details were depressingly familiar. The pile of twisted corpses, still grinning in infernal rapture, the sanity-blasting sigils on the walls. I backed away until I was on the other side of the hallway and contacted the Lord General directly.
It seems we were right about this place, I told him. It was being put to unholy use.
I hesitated.
And if I'm right, I added, the knotting of my guts telling me I was, we got here too late. Whatever they were doing, they've already done.